May 18th, 1995, interview with Larry Walker of the Network Product Business and Mark Marimont of Business Week.
Technical mystery to me. I sort of have a vague idea that it's connection between one computer and another sort of thing.
Okay.
Although I once did a story on token ring versus bus.
Versus Ethernet or versus?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of an underlying.
Okay.
Which I vaguely understood at the time, but it was 10 years ago. So,
okay.
Things have changed. But so I just wonder if you could start out just telling me a little bit about your area of the business and how it's changed over the last few years.
Okay.
Because obviously the whole company has changed quite a lot. Let me get my little tape before to go. Just on its last legs, as you can see.
Larry Walker. Last. I hope it lasts.
We have a double.
We've got a
backup.
That's how that goes. Okay.
Maybe
it'd be useful if I spent a couple minutes. What's the right way to describing the networking industry and how we see ourselves fitting into it and what it's done over the last decade or so. Because what it's done over the last decade or so is important in understanding where we are today. A decade ago, the networking industry was dominated by a couple of players like us, IBM, people who had what were commonly referred to both then and now as vertically integrated solutions, things that all work together. And as long as you use digital servers and digital clients and digital networks, they'd all work well together. And this is also true of IBM. The industry changed, and the whole advent of open standards, which on the computer side was represented by the whole Unix kind of revolution, was represented on the network side by a revolution that went toward basically two types of products, one called hubs and one called routers. And I'm assuming from your comment earlier that I might need to stop for a second and define a hub and a router. Is that correct? Or
yeah, that would be helpful.
No. Okay. If you think of a hub, it really is what the word implies. It's the thing that is at the center of a wiring structure. Mm-hmm. Most wiring structures in buildings are just like telephones. They all come together in a wiring closet. And you put a hub there. And the reason that that's interesting is simply that the network topology of Ethernet, for instance, was originally conceived as just this ring going around a building. And that's not the way buildings want to be wired. That's not the way contractors want to do it. Instead, they want to be star wired into a wiring closet. So a hub is simply a place that you plug all those wires into, and it makes it look like a ring. It makes it look like it's an Ethernet all over the building. So that's what a hub does. There are a couple of companies that are quite famous in the hub business, famous in the sense that they've developed very well. Synoptics is one. Cabletron is another. There are literally a couple hundred companies in the hub business. But those are two that are famous that I'm sure your readers would recognize because they turn out to be good investments at different times in the industry. Mm-hmm. A router is a different thing. A router is a box that sort of sits to the side of all this, and it takes a message, a packet, and from the address information in the packet, figures out literally how to send it to another destination, where in this mesh topology of a network, what path it should take coming out of that node. So it's sort of a one level up in abstraction, or one step further in sophistication than a hub. The reason I take that minute to describe what those two things are. Oh, and by the way, the router business is marked by Cisco, for instance, Wellfleet, for instance, as being very prominent companies. And again, I'm sure many of your readers are very familiar with. The reason I paint that picture is that now there's a third area that has become prominent in the last couple of years called switching. And switching is just like it sounds, just like a telephone switch. It's something that does what hubs and routers do, but does it faster. And there's a trend in this industry for all three of those areas, hubs and routers and switches, to come together. It's just like the trend toward PCs and the PC that I carry around, which I'm afraid to say is one of our older ones. It's like a year old, and I don't have the latest model. But when you see Bernard, I'm sure he'll show you some of the latest stuff, because it's pretty cool. We've got some really nice new PCs. This machine is far more powerful than the machine that ran our entire engineering group 10 years ago. Far, far more powerful. And just the same vector, the same engine that's driving that to happen, which is silicon integration, and then the things you're going to hear about in Hudson, or you'd hear about if you went to Intel or AMD or any semiconductor firm, is driving networks. It's allowing these more sophisticated, these sort of one-step-up functions like routing and switching to exist in hubs. And hubs are the cheapest of all those things. So just like PCs have become very modular, you can add options, they become very cheap, they become very ubiquitous. Hubs are becoming ubiquitous and are getting all these other functions added to them.
Uh-huh.
So we call that what we call a small C convergence phenomenon, that these three areas are converging together. It's interesting then to look at the networking industry with companies such as the ones that I've mentioned and ask the question, who has expertise in all three of those areas, hubs and routers and switching? And I think Charlie probably mentioned this to you. Obviously, this is our claim to uniqueness in this industry. We have gone from the 10-year-ago model of being monolithic, starting about 3 or 4 years ago in engineering, in re-engineering our products, to the point where we understood not only that we were hubs, routers, and switches as independent, important businesses, but that they were converging. So we re-engineered our products to start converging. And we've had those 3 or 4 years worth of experience in doing that. So a lot of people have made the observation that these are converging. That's what the Bay Networks merger of Wellfleet and Synopsys is about. That's what Cisco's acquisitions have been about, 3Com's acquisitions have been about. But they didn't do it soon enough. So now they have the problem, we think, of stitching those together, those things that they've gotten through merger and acquisition together. They've got to stitch products together that weren't engineered together. They weren't ever designed to be together. We started that 3 or 4 years ago. And we think that that's particularly important. I think that that sheet right there, Susan's with me so many times, that's how I build up this whole thing. This is just a list of different places and DataQuest and IDC and other people who have us slated at different places in the markets. Mm-hmm. In hubs, as I said, Synoptics and Cabletron are number one and number two. In routers, Cisco was number one. In switches, there are a few companies that have started up, like Four Systems Incorporated, that have gotten prominent there. All of those, trying through merger and acquisition to get to a position that we're already in. We're already in the top two, three. There'd be a few people who'd say that we're number four in hubs. But in all of those important areas, we're number two, three, or four. There's nobody else who can do that. Nobody else who can say that. If they're converging, we think this is a unique position. And we think that it plays well to what our customers need. Because our customers have been telling us for years that they don't like having all these disparate things. They don't like having them from a whole raft of vendors that they have to make work together. They really would rather have some things that played together that are all done to open standards, so they're not stuck, but a smaller number of vendors rather than a whole raft of vendors. And we think we play well into that.
Mm-hmm. We're looking to actually get some early 95 numbers. So if I get, I think we'll be happy, I think. So I'll get those to you if indeed I get them in your time frame, which is this week, do you need?
2 weeks.
2 weeks? Oh, good. And I may come back to you with some.
We work slowly but thoroughly.
Very good. I like it.
Or maybe just style.
Okay.
It's a good style. So actually, in a lot of ways, our big problem is that not too many people know this. It's getting to be more and more people know this because we've been spending a lot of time going out and telling the world about this, but we've done it sort of quietly. Mm-hmm. This is, I think, part of our style as a corporation is that we're sort of quiet, making sure that we're trying to do the right things, working slowly but thoroughly, actually, is a good way to describe it.
Did you bring some of this together, all these disparate efforts, a year ago? Or?
Right, exactly. And it was about 2 years ago, actually, but that was a big step in it as well because we had different groups doing different parts of this. 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I was asked to take on, at the time, network engineering, which was 4 disparate engineering groups all doing sort of the same thing. And the thing that I was struck by in that experience was how easy it was, how much the engineers actually wanted to get together, because people had this vision of all these things coming together, and they were sort of itching to work together, and only needed a kind of, an internal political charter to do so, to get rid of some of the artificial barriers we had before. But then the next challenge was to get people on the outside, customers, to understand what expertise we had and therefore to engage with us in telling us what they need. Instead of thinking automatically that we were not on the short list, we needed them to put us on the short list. And more, they've been doing that to the point now where this business is about $500 million business that's product only, wholesale only, so not including any services, not including any retail. So, by the way, just a point of definition, Digital Equipment Corporation sells more than that of our stuff because they're parts of Digital Equipment Corporation we sell to wholesale and they sell retail. So if you mark it all up to retail, you'd be at the 650 to 675 kind of range if you want to do comparisons to other companies. Mm-hmm. And that's been 5 consecutive quarters of double-digit growth to get there after several years of what I call stagnation, several years of flat revenue or even declining revenue.
So it was basically that you were aimed more at the sort of the digital,
right,
VAX, EMS world before that.
Exactly. This monolithic, vertically integrated solution. Mm-hmm. So we started in engineering as I say, 3 or 4 years even before I came, this was well underway, understanding what the market had changed to. And then we started as a business unit about anywhere from January to June last year, depending on your definition, but there was a gradual phase-in period for us as a business unit. And what that's been about is making sure that we have a customer interaction, both engagement with them so we understand what they want and engagement with them so they understand what we can do. And that's been the whole point of becoming a business unit. And that meant we grew a sales force from zero a year ago January to a little over 300 right now. And as I say, we think we've got some success from that. Double-digit growth, consecutively for 5 quarters that we've been in business as a business unit.
Quarter-on-quarter growth?
No, year-on-year. Year-on-year.
Okay.
Yeah, if it was quarter-on-quarter, it'd be even better. For sure. Yeah, we haven't gotten to that point yet. This is double-digit growth, but it's low double-digit growth. And we're trying hard now to take that step forward up to the high double digits.
But still not up. I mean, Cisco's going to give us growing much faster.
That's right. Yeah. That's why we're taking that step up. We think it's interesting to look at the second derivative of that, in which we believe that they're growing faster than that, but their growth is slowing down. We have been stagnant for several years and now gotten up off the ground, and our growth is speeding up. So I guess once an engineer, always an engineer. I look at the second derivatives too. And the other thing that's important to note about it is that this is a profitable business. And it's, as the corporation now is profitable, it's obvious that we have a number of profitable businesses. This is one of them, and it's one that is that's healthily profitable. We don't break out profit numbers, unfortunately, as we always say. But
rumors about it, the 70% gross margin or proprietary network, which would be nice if true.
I guess if you look at the network industry as a whole, yeah, you can certainly find plenty of individual products that will pass that. The highest companies that I know of are in the 60 kind of range for gross margins. And we have profits all the way through gross margins as well as sales load, SG&A load, and all that sort of thing that are industry standard for the networking industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything else?
And obviously with those sorts of dollars, we've got plenty of customers who look at this and say, yeah, this makes sense. This is a way that we can integrate our networking needs. The Hong Kong University of Science and Technology is an interesting example. I don't know if you're familiar with that institution, but it's one that started only about 5 or 6 years ago, and something that the, I guess, steel colony, I can call it, right, for another 2 years, decided they really needed for their infrastructure, their economic infrastructure growth. And they really put together a first-class university. It's quite large now, thousands and thousands of students. I mean, just from scratch to a big institution in a hurry. And their networking scheme is basically our products. They use our hubs, they use our what we call GigaSwitch products for the enterprise switching, and it stitches the whole thing together. We've been selling a lot to various telcos around the world who in turn use it to build their own internal systems and sometimes customer systems. I can't remember which ones we can talk about.
I was going to offer that I can get you a couple of write-ups, Hong Kong as an example, because it's written in a way that our field uses these to sell to other customers and explain how customers are using it, but we've got many that are very willing to be interviewed, Hong Kong being one, a lot of ATM
sure,
customers. Sounds good.
So explain to me, or sort of put this in context, and how this fits into the overall corporate strategy. I mean, I go around and people say networking is our strength, but what is, as opposed to networks,
mm-hmm.
How do you fit into the overall?
Yeah, we're a piece of networking as a corporate strength, and there are other pieces. You probably talked with John Rando some about network services as an important piece in the service that we as a corporation offer to design and integrate and even run networks. There are pieces of software in Enrico's group that has to do with making networks run, both from a management point of view as well as from a operating system point of view, and I mean network operating system, product we have called Pathworks, for instance. So we've got a number of things. There's stuff that goes in our system integration group that is simple expertise, again, in doing design and integration. All those things sort of fit together. I think the simple way of thinking about it is, if you think of us as being embarked on a mission to be the client server vendor of choice, that we see client server as being the computing style of computing that is becoming dominant. I was about to say will become dominant, but I think we're so far along the path now that it's becoming dominant. Digital's in the interesting position, again, that's unique, of being able to build clients, build servers, and build the stuff that hooks them up. So when we talk about ourselves as a networking company, as an overall networking venture, it includes our stuff, it includes these other pieces, and in a sense, it includes the clients and servers in the sense that that's the reason that we exist. We want to hook up clients and servers. And oh, by the way, it's hard to tell anymore what's a client, what's a server, because these things are so powerful that I might have the data on it that you want, and it turns into a server. So there's a lot of flexibility and adaptability that we have to build into that, and that's what we're spending a lot of our technology dollars on, making sure that that happens.
So how does that translate into the real world? I mean, does the customers actually say, most of the time, you know, we're going to buy digital clients, servers, and networks, and have you guys put it all together, or is it much more, is it much more piecemeal than them still?
It's interestingly in between those two. I think the customers learned a hard lesson somewhere between half a decade and a decade ago, and that is that these monolithic vertically integrated systems could work and could work very well. Back schema systems were sort of notoriously well engineered, but they didn't offer any freedom. They didn't offer any capability of going and using something else. So I think customers these days, this is what a lot of them tell me, are in between and saying, gee, we'd really like to be vendor independent and have everything designed to standards, and it's obvious why. On the other hand, when we do that so completely that we buy our PCs from this vendor and our servers from that vendor and our operating system from that and our network operating system there and our hubs there and our routers there and our switches there, we have these tremendous interoperability problems. So I think the pendulum swung from one where there were very few interoperability problems because they were monolithic to one where it was completely open standards, but standards are never quite completely open because there's simple economic reasons to never make them quite completely standard. And the pendulum swung back to somewhere in the middle. So the customers are somewhere in that middle range. We find lots of times we sell our networking gear into customers who are using other people's servers, other people's clients. We find lots of times where we sell it into customers who are using digital servers or digital clients or both. It's really a mixed bag. And in fact, you get sort of a proxy indication of that by looking at how much revenue we see through indirect channels now. Selling through indirect channels, we think of as a proxy for selling off the base, getting away from the digital base of systems. And the corporation as a whole, and we're right along with this, are doing 60% through indirect channels now.
Your division as well? Mm-hmm. Of course, aren't you serving a lot of digital customers through indirect channels as well?
Some. Anecdotally, you can find some, for sure. But anecdotally, you can find more cases where the indirect channel partners are selling into new accounts that we haven't sold into in the past. Mm-hmm. So you'll find some of each. I guess the only point I'm trying to make is that it's somewhere in the middle. And we believe that that's where the pendulum is going to stay for a while because there's benefits to being somewhere in the middle. We don't think it's going to swing back to monolithic. That would be crazy. We don't think it's going to be so sort of wild and woolly as it became for a while because customers are finding that the wild and woolly has some disadvantages. And in the middle, we think that we fit really well, both as a network business and as a corporation, because we think we've learned some stuff from the mistakes we made back in the 80s. And I gathered from what Jamie told me that was actually a topic of some interest to you, that we've done some reflection on mistakes that we made and tried to learn from those and derive lessons that will serve us well in the future. And being so monolithic was clearly a mistake. And getting to be competitive in open standards has meant that we've had to divisionalize along product lines so that I can be completely consumed with the idea of competing with Cisco and Bay, and 3Com, and Cabletron, companies like that, just as Bernard is consumed with competing with Compaq and with Dell Computer and companies like that, or just as any of our business unit or division managers are consumed with competing in that open standard way, and then still having the overlay of the advantage of being able to offer a fairly broad line. In fact, that's broad a line you're going to find in the industry of client servers and all the stuff that hooks them up.
Yeah, maybe you could reflect a bit back on just your experience and, looking at just the narrow, fairly narrow network piece. What was it that, it's not networking wasn't going wrong, it was a support thing for the other side of the business, really. It's like we're going to build networks that go sort of connect to the EMS and things.
Right.
Various things like that. So what, basically you sort of missed the whole, open standards revolution in networking as well as in the
It took us too long
sort of
to
Unix world.
Yeah. I agree.
While Cisco and Wealthy
grew up. And they grew up and took share away from us. Absolutely right. No question about it. We were too late in figuring this out, and we suffered for many years as a result.
I think the fundamental reason for that is fairly straightforward. I always try to make it personal, and I think we as a company became far too arrogant.
What about the internal organization? Sort of a reorganization, what role does that play?
It's been
sort of
essential.
Bringing this out of, these networking things were broad, and some of it was presumably in Salesforce, I don't know.
Exactly. We were, as a company, and this is just as true of networks as anywhere else,
Networks is a piece of central engineering, a piece of central manufacturing, a piece of central marketing, and a piece of a central or generic sales force. And we were finding ourselves losing share in sales cases where a salesperson was going in selling systems or networks or storage or services or whatever they could sell, going up against a salesperson from Cisco or 3Com or Bay, Time, Wellfleet, or Synopsys, who were focused. That's all they knew. That's all they did. So they could come in and knock bricks loose one at a time. And then at the same time, on the PC side, there was a compact person coming. On the server side, there was an HP person coming. The focus that our competitors had was something that we lacked. So getting out of this old monolithic model required some rethinking in technology. It required rethinking in organization in order to focus us on those competitors one at a time. So the reorganization, the divisionalization of the company along product and service lines, we think was essential in getting ourselves into this new round of competitiveness. And in a lot of ways, maybe making it personal again, this arrogance that we had as a company, which human nature, I guess, dictates, goes along with some, in this case, decades of success that digital had. It's unfortunate, but it's even true. We could attack the arrogance by breaking ourselves into business units, because it's a very humbling experience to go out and see a Cisco or a Wellfleet taking market share away and understand that they made some right decisions in the 1980s that we didn't make. Now we think what goes around comes around in some sense. And we think that attacking that arrogance has led us to a new mode of working that I hope is apparent to you as you talk with a lot of different people at the company, that's much more customer-focused, much more what I call inquisitive. Inquisitive in the sense that we're always going to customers and asking them, we're always going to analysts and asking them, we're always talking with journalists and finding out what perceptions are out there, why they're there, and what needs people have. Why do they buy from Cisco? What do they like about it? What don't they like about it? What are places that we can provide something that a Cisco or a 3Com or a Cablecom is not providing? And we find by focusing the questions that way, we find out new things that, like in the old digital, we would have simply sat in our ivory tower and tried to figure out on behalf of the customers. Being broken down into divisions means that we have, in the space of about 900 people, which is about the size of this business, all the field people, all the support engineers, all of the engineering, all of the marketing, everything, all together, so that these field people know these engineering people, know these marketing people, know these manufacturing people, and the level of integration becomes much, much, much better. And the reason that that leads to business success, I think, is because these people out here talk to the customers all the time. And they drag their friends from marketing out to see customers. Then they call up their friends from engineering and say, I was just talking to a customer and I need you to come out and pay a call with me. And we talk to our friends in manufacturing and say, I was just talking with our channel partner. And our channel partner wants this in logistics, and here's why. So that's the other, I think, manifestation of the new company, is this focus on indirect channels. It's a way to get access to more customers with meaningful inquisitiveness, with meaningful dialogue with customers. That's a way of opening up the market.
So some of those folks have actually taken the sales jobs that Larry has mentioned, so there's a lot of connection back in because they used to be in this organization. So I find that a lot, that there's a lot of synergy that did not exist. And of course we have that dedicated sales force now, which we didn't have. So we have people who are really interested in what we're doing and how we're doing it. And that's why I have all these customers I can give you, is this. There's so much energy around spreading the word. So it's really working well.
So tell me a little bit about why we scattered with the pieces. Any particularly wonderful horror stories?
We got some. Let me answer the question in a couple of different ways, or sort of in two stages, because this is the way we decided to put it together, and whether this was conscious on somebody's part or not, I'm not quite sure. But we first started by saying in engineering, in just the engineering function, that we had literally four disparate groups that were working in networking. We needed to bring them together. And there's something that, Bill Strecker, who I think you already talked to, decided that he wanted to be working with Bob Palmer literally two and a half, 3 years ago, something like that.
Fall of 92.
Right, that's it. So they called me up and asked if I would be willing to take that on. And that made sense to me because if I had, for a long time, thought that we had too many different things going on. As I said, that was surprisingly easy once we started. There was a political situation before that in which different groups had grown up and they were actually literally competing with each other.
In what sense?
In the sense that, different groups were competing with each other to be the one to bring out a new product.
So was there some particular area where you were building the same product as both?
Yeah, there actually were several. The idea of concentration or hubs probably was actually a place that we were building product doing the same function in separate places. And as I say, I don't think that this was because of any desire on the part of the people in the groups to compete for the sake of competing. Uh-huh. It's because the political charters were not such that they were together. I'll always remember the first time we got, this was literally 2 weeks after I came into the job, I put together about 20 people or 25 people into a room so we could start talking about how we're going to bring them together. And we did the classic thing that you do with meetings like that. We split into three different groups and they went into separate rooms with facilitators and wrote it on the board. It's three or four, I can't remember which, all came back in the afternoon and reported out the results, and they all reported out the same result. They all said, the way we ought to organize is this. And what this was consolidated around all products look like this here, all products look like that there, all products look like that there. By the end of the day, we had designed the organization. And I fully expected going into that.
So the engineering groups were in, was one of them attached to the sales force?
No, they were all reporting into central engineering. But the first place they came together was at the vice president of engineering.
Why would they have four separate groups? One of them was reporting, one of them was supporting X, one of them was supporting the server business.
It literally was no more sophisticated than political stuff going on. Political meaning at the engineering staff at the time, at that engineering staff level, a number of the vice presidents thought that they needed to do something in networking, so they'd start up a group. And then this person over here would start up a group. And eventually they came to the same engineering or business conclusion that we need to be in this particular area, so they both start building the same product.
So when you did that, were you able to eliminate some redundancies?
Yeah, we went through a lot of redundancy elimination. We went through a lot of layoffs. We literally decreased the headcount within network engineering by 30% or 40% over that time, which was by far in my entire career, which has been 20 plus years, by far the most painful thing I've ever been through. And we had done layoffs before, but that was in other parts of digital that were doing layoffs before that. But we had several good people, several good groups. These were not people who were incompetent or not doing their job that we had to let go. And that, as I say, that's something that is engraved on not only my mind, but I think on the corporate consciousness now, where we have, I guess you know, gone down by a factor of two or so in our total headcount. And that's something that we're going to go to tremendous pains to avoid ever having to do again.
Uh-huh.
So we went through a lot of that, and it had a good business result to do that, but it is something that I think a lot of people, and I believe a lot of your readers, because I know you have written several articles about this, understand is something that is a last-ditch effort. It's not something that you do lately.
Uh-huh. But culture like this.
Yeah. Culture like many, but certainly like this, where there's been a lot of attachment to the company. But Samuel Johnson said something about getting the mind focused through the prospect of being hanged in the morning. That is true, and it works. And it's something that I think really led to a lot of these changes in attitude and changes in organization to support the attitude.
Uh-huh. So some of this was starting to happen a couple, 2 or 3 years ago. It did happen, but I don't know if you agree, but some of the folks I've talked to say this sort of hanging dawn, or night before the hanging moment, was this Q3
a year ago.
Except, I don't know how much of a shock that was.
I think everybody in the company will tell you it was a shock. At the time, Bob was quoted in the press as saying it was a shock. So
right.
I don't think anybody hides the fact that it was a shock. And it was to all of us. I remember I was in Australia visiting our team over there at the time. And got the call in the middle of the night, obviously, because of the time difference. And literally fell out of bed.
bummer.
Yeah.
I was obviously up the rest of the night, even with the jet lag, and this was something to keep me up. And that was, again, one of, maybe that was the most painful of all the painful times we went through. We were starting to really turn our business around at the time, and we did some restructuring and layoffs at that time that, I'd say, were one of the most painful of them. So yeah, I think that's a fair description, and that was the bottom of the bottom.
But what did that do in terms of, you know, energizing, coalescing, or whatever the name of the team?
It made the divisionalization idea really take hold.
It hadn't been before?
It had been moving that way, and it was clear that it was moving that way, but it gelled it. It made it precipitate out of the solution. And it made it transparent, I think, to the company and to everybody in the company that we had to do that. That we had to be closer to the customers. We had to strip ourselves of the arrogance that we had had as a company in the 80s, and that had to happen immediately. That there was no cushion. There was no time left. It really was the Samuel Johnson effect, I believe. It really was this prospect that energized people, galvanized people to move to the new model extremely quickly.
Uh-huh.
So over that period for us.
Prospect of what? Was that bankruptcy? Or?
Prospect of failure. However it would have played out if we had simply gone ahead along the same path, whether it was bankruptcy or having to have the population again, or disappointing our customers, or disappointing ourselves. However you define that prospect, something that people find.
I gather there was some sort of internal political resistance to moving toward this business model before that. That was basically the problem. So all of a sudden, this sort of set broke through the resistance.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good way to describe it. Because getting back to one of your earlier questions about putting things together, that putting the engineering groups together 2.5 years ago was a piece of it. But very quickly, we figured out that the next piece was we needed to, with that engineering group, put together marketing and sales and manufacturing and logistics and all the things that would make up of business.
Uh-huh.
And I think the results last year, Q3 especially, and it wasn't quite a cause and effect, but it, again, was quite a catalyst for us as a company to say that's the correct model. That's the model that we want to build all our businesses on. So that's the way John Randall runs, and that's the way Renard runs. And that's the way each of the divisions and each of the business units run. Now we have some empirical evidence that that was the correct decision to get back to the modest level of profitability that we're at today. We think is a direct result of having made those changes a year ago.
So how would you characterize how you're positioned in terms of your mindset, organization, etc., versus where the rest of the industry is or lies or is going or whatever? It's kind of a broad question.
Maybe one way of getting at it is to talk about a couple of anecdotes. We have the guy who was our salesperson in Connecticut, and since we have an indirect sales model and our total field force is 300 people, this person's territory is Connecticut, the entire state. So he's not calling on individuals and selling things one at a time. He's working with partners, obviously. He used to work at Cisco. I was talking to him a few months ago, and he said, you know, this is refreshing. This is so much fun. I'm having so much fun being here. And he enjoyed Cisco. And Cisco, by the way, is a wonderful company and done remarkable things. I have nothing bad to say about them. But his reaction was, this is exciting. And it's exciting because it's growing. It's a ground floor. It's the place, the way he said it was, the place that you all are at, because he had just joined, he said, the Delphoto says you all, is the place that Cisco was at several years ago. It's that place where you got all the right things together and it's just a matter of time and energy and hard work to make it come through. And I find the mindset of most of the people in the business is remarkably healthy in that way. Having gone through the bad years where the mindset was something like, am I going to get laid off tomorrow? Naturally, and with good empirical reason for people to have that mindset. I spend a lot of time just talking to people and asking them how they're feeling and whether they're having fun. Having fun is high on my list of values. And I find, by and large, the answer to that now is not only, yes, I'm having fun, but, yeah, this is great. This is so much fun, and we have so much potential and so much opportunity. I just, it's hard to find enough hours in the day. In fact, I've actually started to become worried that people are working so hard and putting so many hours in that
balance is starting to become a problem. That's a nice problem to worry about, because it's not that people are coming in and feeling change of their desks or change of their cars. It's that people are really dedicating themselves to the business. And it's so different than it was a year or two ago when spirits were very low.
It sounds like what you're saying is sort of throwing off the internal shackles that you put on yourselves and allow the feet.
That's a good way to describe it. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. One of the ways I've described it often in the past is that there were many people in the company who felt that this was the right thing that we should do. Again, it's not a novel thought or a unique thought for a long time, and it took many people being willing to beat their heads against a brick wall for a long time. Sort of one brick at a time, knock the wall over. And now we've knocked the wall over and people are just screaming through. It's a forced analogy, I suppose, but it gets the idea across is that there was some pain in doing this and some significant energy that a lot of people, and I think you're talking to many of them in your rounds of interviews, had to put in to get management there, to get employees there, to get channel partners to believe that we were serious this time, and that's what we find now. In fact, that's why our indirect sales are going up so dramatically, as not only a proportion of our sales, but that's with that our sales are also growing. So I think we're having that effect.
What percentage of your sales are still of the networking sales are basically still X type of our internal digital?
Well, the indirect direct portion is about the same as companies. It's about 60-40. And we take that as a proxy, as I say, for being off the base and on the base. And you're right, sometimes the indirect channels are addressing digital accounts. I'd say anecdotally, though, that when they address digital accounts, they're usually addressing different groups from the ones that the direct account teams do. The direct account teams, which are first split into two pieces for us, I mentioned network services as one of our sister divisions, if you will, that provides integration and design, that sort of thing. They also resell products because they'll go in and do the complete job. So they're, from our point of view, a channel partner. They're one of our distributors, or resellers, I should say. And then there's the direct account team, which simply is a direct sales force who will go in and take orders from any feature. So we see those two things now are on the order of 40%. I think over time they'll reduce further, not so much because they shrink as the other part continues to grow. My guess is that an ideal level, or that our eventual level is going to be something in the order of 80-20.
So in other words, your networking people don't go out and call individual accounts? Your salespeople for this?
Our salespeople don't have pens and pencils. They don't have order pads. They cannot take an order from an end user. They can take stocking orders from partners. And those partners can be external partners, like Anister Brothers in Chicago, or Tech Data, or Maricel selling to VARs, etc. Or they can be internal. The account business unit or the network services also sell our stuff. But our salespeople are there. Really, sales is sort of a misnomer. Sometimes I think we ought to call them demand generation people, but it's too much of a mouthful. But they're there to create demand for salespeople from our partners. And every single dollar of revenue, that's why I call it wholesale, every single dollar we get comes through a partner, either internal or external. So these are 300 people out there helping those people make sales.
So do you think, I've got a feeling from other people I've talked to, there's sort of almost a two or three phase recovery and then growth plan, as it were. First one was reorganizing ourselves internally and sort of getting financial house in order. Maybe that's the second one, but and making sure basically the company survived and moved back into the black, as it were.
So we were generating cash from operations, for instance.
Right.
And
so
losing cash from
operations. Cash from operations. Having to pay cash to lay people off.
Right. Exactly.
And now so we're now I get the feeling that you're sort of moving into the next phase, which is how to grow the business and a sort of strategic framework around that. Can you give me some flavor of how that's working in sort of the internal management group? I presume you're on this sort of top group that sits around, I don't know how you do it, retreats or weekends or sitting around trying to think of growth.
That's an interesting question. There aren't a lot of mechanics. We all sort of know each other and we all talk together and that sort of thing. But we're also, in this new organization, more focused on our own business. So I know personally I spent much less time in there than I used to be all the time. And now I'm over there
more really. And I reported to Charlie, who you talked to this morning or yesterday.
Yesterday.
And Charlie runs the division, and I don't know if you mentioned this, but his division level staff is literally something like 15 people. I mean, it is a very small shell, so I get a lot personally from Charlie and from his finance cohort, Jim Flanagan, but it's very much a sort of a personal kind of a thing in which Charlie's providing a lot of advice and expertise and direction. But it's much less formal than that. We do a lot of retreats or long staff meetings or anything like that. But there is this common sense, a common bond.
But is there some,
we're at that point of growth. We're at that third.
But is there some sort of strategic thinking process you're going through now?
The company's going through one that's, that, I don't know, somebody talked to you about it, involved an external consultant and working through what the right strategy to, sorry, I'm going to say this. It's more strategy articulation, I think, than it is creation. It's more figuring out the right way to make it plain to the world that this is the way we think, this is the way that we're going, which talks about client-server, and it talks about the importance of connectivity, for instance, as one of our central competencies. So when people talk about networking as a competency of the business, they're talking about how we connect machines, and it's our products, and it's the software products, and it's the services all together that we think sets us apart. We're a collection of businesses that competes, in our case with the Cisco's and 3Coms, and in Bernard's case with the Compaq's and Dell's, and in each business unit's case with some set of competitors, and has an overlay of interoperability, has an overlay of as they say, not one-stop shopping, but a smaller number of vendors that customers have to deal with. And it's that combination and articulating that strategy. So as I say, the word connectivity comes up a lot, the word networking comes up a lot. And that process is going on, and we've all participated in it. And as I say, I see it more, and this might be a little different view than you get from other people. I see it more as a strategy articulation, but I think we're well on the way to doing that than as opposed to a strategy of creation.
Sort of giving me, in some senses, I've done obviously lots of different interviews with lots of different companies. Sometimes top management really believes, and I think correctly in many cases, that you articulate the strategy clearly, and then employees and everybody else sort of understands it a lot better. You actually move toward that strategy as opposed to sort of being implicit but not ever said, and people get a little confused about it. And I've done a lot of work with Kodak, and I think they really, management,
right.
We focus the company around what their
core competencies
are. Imaging,
imaging,
whatever that is, and we're going to be the world leader in imaging. And,
right.
Wherever imaging is going, we're going to do it. If it goes
right.
Digital, if it goes this, if it goes that.
Right. So we're going to be electronic, chemical, but we're not going to be in a zillion other businesses. They really have refocused and gotten out of their core competencies.
So, but I go, I've said this to a couple of other people, but I go around and talk to a few, your customers, people in the marketplace, consultants, and say, we don't really know what digital is, or where, why are they different from HP, or why are they different from IBM, or what do they stand for? They seem to be doing a lot of good things right in 20 different areas, but what does it all mean? So, and that's sort of, I think that's sort of...
I think it's a fair shot.
The feeling is that that's sort of hampering your marketing, and that the customer doesn't understand why they should go to you, sort of share of mind, or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
So what, can you explain to me in some simple fashion what it is that they're missing?
Yeah, whenever I talk to a customer, not whenever, I find this question actually comes up less frequently than it used to, but it still comes up a significant number of times. It used to be, so the first question on people's mind, financial viability and strategic viability of the corporation. And then they'll talk about hubs.
Right.
Now I find something like half the time people want to talk about it, but they're anxious to get onto the hubs and products. I think the way I described it earlier around client-server being the underlying force for the company, and that we can supply the services and the products that allow you to implement client-server style of computing, the client-server style of computing, is the driving force for the company. In a lot of ways, we think of that way that you write client-server client and then a slash and server, that we in network are the slash. We're the thing that ties the clients and servers together. And if you're a customer, I think there's some benefit that you see in knowing whether you're going to buy the clients, the slash, and the server, all three from that vendor or not, knowing that this company has expertise in all of those areas and the service that overlays it and the software that runs. It gives you a sense that we can prove, actually, that these are people who know what they're doing. They know how these things are supposed to fit together. So saying that we're the client-server company doesn't mean that we're going into a monolithic model again. What it means is that, and this is why divisionalization is so important, we have divisions focused on clients, we have divisions focused on server, we have divisions focused on the slash, we have divisions focused on software, we have divisions focused on services. In each of those, we have benefits that allow us to compete successfully with the Ciscos and the Dells and anybody else that's more focused than we are that you want to name, because of that focus that divisionalization gives us. And on top of that, and this is why we think many customers come to us, we understand how to make this thing work together. So what's interesting now is that we're getting success with the indirect channels, which is more a piece part kind of a way of selling things. So our piece parts must be pretty competitive to do that. And we still have success with big customers, like PTTs and telcos and banks and universities and people who want to do it all together. Again, there's nobody else we think who can make that claim.
Which is?
That we can be successful with both of those. And it's necessary.
But you're moving more toward the indirect channel. It's more, as you say, sort of not commodity like products, but, you know.
Standalone.
So, you've got to compete on price performance.
Yeah. And you have to. That's the key. In the old days.
But you don't do it. Networking doesn't have much to do with that.
It does. In fact, many pieces of networking are becoming commodity like.
I mean, networking in a sort of larger sense, putting the whole mission of the company. What you're saying is putting it all together.
No, I think both points are important. The network's important to a high-end customer, let's call it, a person like a Citibank or somebody like that who wants to do enterprise networking. They want to know that they're working with somebody who understands clients and servers and the slash and software and services and everything all together. But in addition to that, and this is the thing that took us a while as a company to realize, in addition to that, we had to be competitive in clients and in servers and in network and in each thing one at a time. We had to do both. And until we divisionalized, I don't think that we did both. In some sense, in the old days, we relied on this part that we could make it all fit together. And we did that well. And customers were willing to pay a premium for it. In the new days, they want that, but they won't pay a big premium for it. So we have to be competitive in each of the individual. And networking, no less so than anything else. That's why we need to be competitive in the commodity parts of networking. Stackable hubs is a subset of the hub market, for instance. It's very low cost. And we have a new line that's very attractive. And we find from our channel partners, from our customers, from analysts, that they find it very attractive. We are building more capability into the hubs that allows you to do switched networks. Therefore, you need what are called virtual networks. You have a whole new architecture that describes that called Envision. That you probably got some background on that we're very excited about. And as we roll that out over the last 6 weeks, Susan and I have spent a lot of time together in the last 6 weeks, let's put it that way, talking to a lot of people about it. We've been struck by the reaction people have, which is that this is well thought out. This makes sense in how it takes hubs and router switches together, and it's competitive in each of the levels because we put a product roll out together with it. It has meat behind it. It has some substance behind it, which some of our competitors haven't done.
So look, check out. Actually, I come with some vague understanding here, but basically what you're saying is you need to, one big competitive edge that the company has is this ability to put things together. In order to make that sale work and to make sure that you have competitive products, you need to have competitive products in each of those areas. So you need to also compete in sort of commodity box business in those areas to sort of hone your skills, as it were, make sure that you're at least competitive in that bet. And also, ability to put this together and just sort of overlay for a big customer that you can more sophisticated.
Yeah, exactly. The pendulum swung from monolithic vertically integrated at substantial cost premium to entirely independent but with substantial interoperability problems to somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And as it swings back, as it has swung back to somewhere in the middle, we're just literally ideally positioned to do that. Because we have that legacy, and now this forced us, as Samuel Johnson would say, this forced us to become competitive in each of those areas. Now we are. Look at what we've done in PCs. Look at how Alpha's starting to sell. Look at how well we do it in multi-customer, multi-vendor customer services. Look at the things that we do in each of those areas. We've had some pretty substantial success.
So let's move on to a different topic for a minute. I know your time is relatively short, but
What about the sort of, I don't know how to describe it, the top, really high level management, the way people work together, and, you know, is it, I gather it used to be, A, somewhat political, but also very, you know, people weren't afraid to speak their minds and meetings and that kind of thing.
That's always been a trait of